This is Think Smart with TMFG, your weekly podcast of what's newsworthy and relevant to everyday Canadians, with your host, Senior Financial Advisor Rob McClelland and Mike Conan of Asante Capital Management. Today on Think Smart with TMFG, Mike and I will be discussing divorce and some of those things that couples need to be fully aware of after they've gone through a divorce. And maybe these are some things that people might want to think about before they actually get a divorce.
There's a lot of different things to consider, you know, and it was funny when I started to research on this, there's a lot of couples that are not just together for love.
So, Mike, we've talked about divorce on a number of podcasts. I think this one will be helpful. You've gone through a divorce yourself many years ago. What's the first thing that comes to your mind that, you know, a lot of people don't take into account?
I always tell people, if you can manage to be amicable between the couples, you can save a lot of money for the family. When I see divorces go smoothly and I see them go very, very rough along the way. And when they go rough, a lot of money goes to lawyers and no one ends up winning. And I always say, you got to make sure everyone's protecting their own interests, but sometimes it gets to the point where it doesn't help anyone and lawyers get rich and everyone loses their money. So you got to watch you don't get in that situation if it can be avoided.
So in other words, if you had a pie and you have a divorce, you in theory, you each get half the pie. But if it's not a good divorce, the lawyer's going to take a third of the pie?
Yeah. So it may not be 50-50 when you have a lawyer taking 20 or 30.
And what are some of the other things that, besides just, you know, lawyers getting, what also is difficult about dividing the money?
So we're going to split this into a bunch of different things. We'll start off with the money side of things, right? And as I said, with money, is anyone better off after divorce? Usually not. Because it's going to be, they're going to have the cost of the divorce. And plus, your expenses don't go down that much when you're living alone. It's not half of the expenses. Your housing hasn't dropped in half. Your food costs don't really drop in half. So it's never a financially viable thing. It's done for other reasons. Well, I guess the next thing to go is, can a couple even afford to divorce? And this is a big one nowadays. Research has shown almost 25% of couples are actually staying together for financial reasons. It's a scary thought, isn't it?
Well, you and I have worked with a lot of different families over the years. We know some clients that we've had have stayed together, but not really been together. But, you know, according to the law, they're still married. And yet they're leading completely separate lives, often in different locations.
Next thing, when you go into money, valuations can be very difficult and a very rough point when you're going through a divorce. Some things are simple. Accounts are easy. RSPs, you can go and you have a value at the date of the breakup, or your bank accounts or your open investment accounts all have a very strict value to them. When you get into things like houses, businesses, art, things like that, it's very tough to come up with a good valuation on all those things.
I think of a couple situations where I've had clients go through divorce. They've got rental properties, maybe. How do you get a true, proper valuation on it? You know, maybe the one partner wants that valuation to be low, the other partner wants it to be high. You know, you go out and get three quotes on it, but even then, you're wondering if it's still the right price. Businesses are even more complicated. Valuing businesses is an art. It's not like a stock that's publicly traded. You take a private company and someone could say it's worth $5 million or $10 million. So really, really tricky to do.
That's when the accountants argue over quite a bit. And that's where there's something called forensic accountants. And it's a big business nowadays. And those are actually accountants who will go and dive in and find out what the business is actually worth beyond just the, let's say, face value of it.
Well, I had a situation where one of my clients is a forensic accountant, and he was telling me about a case recently where he had to spend over a few months in court just to make sure the other party was sticking by the rules. And he had, and so his client paid him to be in court every day. He said it was probably the most boring time in his life, having to sit through a court case every day about couples fighting over money. So
another thing that comes up, too, is many times people are getting divorced and they have to value things at that time, which can be done. Let's say, as we said, it's not that easy, but what can be more difficult is you have to know what you brought into the marriage. So if it was a couple that actually brought things into the marriage, you have to know the value of those things that were brought into the marriage when they were brought in. And this gets tricky because sometimes it's 20 years ago, trying to find the valuation of something from 20 years ago. When you first got married, you weren't thinking of doing, no one puts a list of how much everything they have is worth at that time. So now you're going back in history and trying to put numbers on different things like that. What was your house worth that you brought into the marriage? All these different things. And that's very difficult to do.
But I guess the home is also a big issue. You know, typically the house is maintained by one spouse. So, you know, you get separated, you get divorced. One spouse will keep the house. One will go out and try and find a new house with whatever's left over. If there's a cottage and a house, maybe one spouse gets the cottage, one spouse gets the house. I mean, that was your situation. Your ex got the house, you got the cottage. The only problem is now you're homeless in Toronto. So you've got to figure out that. And I guess on the flip side, your wife is now cottageless. So it works both ways.
I think the one thing that happens nowadays is the problem is people have a lot of their net worth in their house. And when they have more than 50% of the net worth in the house, they can no longer just split that up because there isn't enough, let's say, liquid equity to pay off the one spouse. So it creates a situation where they'd either have to both sell the house and both find smaller places to live or cheaper places to live or come up with another solution. And many times one spouse would be required to take, let's say, a mortgage out to pay off the other spouse. And the other problem you do run into, too, is many people qualify for large mortgages as a couple. But a lot of times if you have a couple and one house is getting the spouse, they may be the spouse that's staying home with the kids. They no longer qualify for a mortgage because they don't have income. So now you're almost forced to sell this house. So it's more difficult than people realize to keep that home in one spouse's name.
I think that's also more common, especially, you know, does the second spouse. It's pretty rare that we see where husband and wife both make the same amount of money. So let's assume both are employed. You may have a situation where the wife is making, you know, $150,000 a year and the husband's making $50,000 or vice versa. And that the person with the $150,000 a year would qualify for the mortgage, that the other partner with $50,000 wouldn't qualify. And that makes an uneven distribution.
And the problem is usually the person that would have the lower income is a lot of times staying home with the kids, if kids are involved. And that's the person that actually wants to keep the house.
Let's talk about the kids. They're the ones who are probably impacted the most by the divorce. What are some of the things that you've experienced either with yourself or with your clients?
Well, support arrangements, it's the one nice thing about kids is support arrangements are sort of formalized by the government. So the government has set formulas on what you pay based on your income, the spouse's income, the number of kids you have. And that's a formula, so you know what that's going to be. The only thing about child support for the person paying it, it's not a tax deductible expense, which makes sense because if you're home paying for your kids, it wouldn't be tax deductible either. So it makes sense that that's not tax deductible. Spousal support will be tax deductible if it's paid on a regular basis, but child support will not be tax deductible. And the other question is, how long does child support go on? It can go on a long time. We've seen situations where there's people paying for kids that are in their late 20s because they continue to stay in school. And it depends on how the agreement was drawn up. But sometimes they say they're considered dependent as long as they're in school. And we've seen kids go to university and decide to go for the master's of doctrine. And one parent is still paying support for that.
Yeah, I've got that situation with a client right now. And the other child wants to go on to get a medical degree. And so school is a lot longer than initially expected.
Kids are a tricky thing because unfortunately it can be a negotiation place for people getting what they want. So kids is always a very tough thing because lawyers can sometimes use that as a negotiation tool. It's not a great thing, but it does tend to happen.
And again, the kids are the ones who suffer the most. Next, let's talk about, you know, whether you own a business or a career, what are some of the impacts of going through a divorce on either of those? Does it impact your career? Could it impact your business, the value of your business?
Well, this is a time where when two people, as you said, many cases, spouses have different amounts of income. And a lot of time there's an equalization involved in this. And this is many times when one partner has stayed home to raise the family and the other has worked, but there might have been missed opportunity by the person that's stayed home to raise the kids. And at the end of the time, if they've been together for 20 years, one person has been at home raising kids for 20 years, the other's been developing a career. It's not fair when they go and split up. The one person has a great career developed, the other person has nothing. So there has to be some type of equalization to compensate for that. And that's a big piece of what the lawyers are involved in doing. That's usually the biggest, let's say, subjective part of a divorce agreement. As we said, child support's very easy. That's a formula. We can figure out the valuation of all items they have. That's an equal split or however the split is arranged. The toughest thing to decide someone's value and how much they lost from missed opportunity. And again, spousal support is something that will be tax deductible for the person given it. But there is the amount of how much it's going to be or how long it's going to be. And if it continues, if they go and move on with their life and they get married, if spousal support comes to an end, there's all different types of arrangements in there.
We talked about business valuations can be difficult. I always think, and you know, I've seen this in action with clients where you can tell the couple are disconnected and probably one of the members of that couple has a plan to leave the relationship at some point. They know it in advance and they start planning accordingly. And whether they, you know, decrease business valuations or they put money away on the side, you often see some suspicious behavior. And then suddenly you get a notice that they're getting a divorce. And so you always think you know what your partners do, but if your partner's planning on getting a divorce from you, you probably don't know what they're doing right now.
The problem that happens many times is the easy thing for lawyers to look at is your T4 income. So you'll find many people, if they expect that they're going to be going through a divorce, they'll start to reduce the amount of salary they're taking out of the companies to make it look like they make less money. And then, of course, that's when the forensic accountants have to go in and figure out how much is being kept inside the company and the valuation of that.
So you mean the accountant's actually in on the divorce before the spouses?
Unfortunately, sometimes it's the first call when relationships are going bad.
I had a situation not that long ago where I was pretty certain that the client had stopped saving. And I was pretty certain that there was still money being generated from the business, but the client had stopped saving. And I didn't see it in expenses. I had a pretty good clue where that money was going. Sure enough, a little later on, someone leaves their spouse. And you're right, the money's elsewhere.
Yeah.
Let's go to estate planning. It's not something that people think about, but there's lots of things in place when you get a divorce and maybe now you get remarried. There's all kinds of issues. What's the first thing that pops into your head, Mike?
First thing, as soon as there's a support arrangement, there needs to be insurance in place to handle that support arrangement in case anyone passed away. So a lot of times they'll need a term policy that covers the duration of the payments that are required. So if someone's paying $100,000 a year for 10 years, they need to make sure they have $1 million 10-year term life insurance policy to cover that obligation. The second thing is when you get a divorce, your wills don't automatically change. So when you get remarried, your will is automatically null and void. When you get divorced, that isn't the case. So people, when they get divorced, they forget they still have their original will. So that has to be adjusted. You lose a lot of things, a lot of extra tax advantage that you have with a spouse. You know, within spouses in Canada, if one spouse dies, their RSP can roll over to that second spouse. Once you're divorced, you no longer have the ability to roll over RSPs. So you have to go take a look at your beneficiaries because there's no longer a tax advantage to leave it to your ex. They're now taxed. Even with open accounts, again, open accounts can transfer to spouses at cost. But once you're divorced, you can no longer transfer open accounts at cost. Now everything has to go at market value. So there's a bunch of changes in tax rulings once you become divorced.
So I think you throw that into the equation, you put children into the equation, and it becomes even more complicated. Today, let's say you had your spouse as the beneficiary of your RSP or your TFSA, and you want your kids to be the beneficiary if something was to happen to your ex-wife or ex-husband, but you've maybe got a new partner now. Should they not be the beneficiary of your RSP and TFSA? So things can get very complicated.
Yeah, many times what's going to happen is after the divorce, you're going to need to see an estate lawyer. And an estate lawyer is generally not the same person as your family law lawyer. So you're going to need to see someone who can handle those estate issues and get all that in order. But people are usually so fed up with lawyers at the time, by the time they finish the divorce, they just want to get away from all lawyers' offices and they ignore all these details. So again, usually when we meet with a client that's gone through it, we have to force them back to the lawyer to take care of all this new documentation they need.
So, you know, you're going through the exercise, you're planning to get a divorce. How many of all these issues that we've talked about do you actually think about before you decide to separate?
I tell you, there's very probably about 10% of them. There's going to be 90% of them you don't think of. It's probably one that I'd say it's one of the highest times in life that you need a financial advisor to help you through this stuff. And your financial advisor has to also work with these different parties, with your lawyers and with your accountants to make sure this all works. Some people go and they do this, they got to run off and just say, that's it, I'm leaving, I'm getting a divorce. They haven't thought about all this stuff. And it just creates an absolute mess.
And that's where the pie gets divided up a third, a third, a third. A third of the lawyers. And remember, it's not just one lawyer. You're each having to get your own lawyers. And that can be extremely expensive.
And lawyers love a nasty divorce because it makes them a lot of money.
That's enough on lawyers. Glad neither yourself or me are a lawyer. That brings us to the end of another week. Thank you for joining us. This is Rob and Mike with Think Smart from the McClellan Financial Group of Asante Capital Management, reminding you to subscribe so that you can have your best retirement ever.
You've been listening to the McClellan Financial Group of Asante Capital Management Limited. Asante Capital Management Limited is a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund and the Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada. Insurance products and services are provided through Asante Estate and Insurance Services Incorporated. This material is provided for general information and is subject to change without notice. Every effort has been made to compile this material from reliable sources. However, no warranty can be made as to its accuracy or completeness. Before acting on any of the previous information, please make sure to see a professional advisor for individual financial advice based on your personal circumstances. The opinions expressed are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Asante Capital Management Limited.